FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450. Rutherford County's place to talk. Your good neighbor station. Stand by, Murfreesboro. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
Good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. This morning, Mitchell Boats with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. Mitchell, good morning to you.
Good morning, Bart.
Good to have you with us on this nippy morning.
It does feel cool.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's cold.
It's 28 degrees outside.
But it should be. It's wintertime.
That's right. It certainly is.
Brand new year. And if it weren't cold, then Duane Trail's forecast would have been wrong, and I'd hate for Duane's forecast to have been wrong, so I'm glad it's cold.
He hit it on the head, I believe.
So far, I think he's done all right.
Now, is there, it's obviously you're not going to be out doing a lot of yard work today, but this is still a good time of the year to plant some trees and
you bet.
Things
those live Christmas trees, bald and burlap trees, potted trees that you may have used, you need to get those in the ground. You know, they don't do any good sitting in the house. So Christmas is over, get those things outside. You know, the ground's not any, it's not going to get any softer, I don't think, than it is today. During this season, we probably as saturated moisture-wise as we've been in a long time. You know, creeks are up running and so on, and some ponds are filled back up again. So the moisture levels where it is up there pretty good now. Maybe in some cases, folks might need to let a spot dry out a little bit before they try to plant their dig the hole to plant the tree. But the thing is, go ahead and get it out there just pretty soon. The sooner the better. It's probably going to make the tree have a better chance of surviving in the long run. So pick out a good spot for it. And, you know, thinking about picking out a good spot, put it in a place that will fit the tree. Sometimes we forget. You look at a plant of a given size in a pot or a ball and burlap plant, and it's not mature at that point. And very likely it will get much larger if it is planted and allowed to grow. And that's sometimes that causes problems because it grows the branches and so on grow into structures, or it grows to where it obscures vision on driveways and street corners, or it grows into power lines, and then the power company has to come trim the tree back because, you know, we want our electricity to stay on, but we don't like the look of the chopped up trees and so on. So people create problems for themselves sometimes when they do not keep those things in their mind when they're picking out places to put trees and so on. So, you know, kind of keep that in mind. But no, now would be a great time to do work like that as far as planting those perennial woody ornamental plants, trees and shrubs that are dormant now. But one thing to keep in mind, you know, even on pretty days, you could sure go out and renew mulch beds, refresh mulch, add new mulch to it and so on. But also remember that because the ground is soft, it will compact much more readily than it will during dry conditions. So it would be recommended that you minimize traffic, excessive foot traffic as well as vehicular traffic on lawn areas and so on, just to help minimize the compaction. And, you know, compacted now can impact or influence the way the ground allows roots to grow into it during the coming growing season, and also can influence the way water penetrates, infiltrates, and so on. So, you know, just try to minimize compaction.
And if you're looking for a warmer day, I mean, because it is 28 right now.
Well, I expect it'll get warmer today.
It'll get up to about 40 today.
Well, that's, you know, it's tolerable.
That's not bad. And 46 for Saturday. But now listen, by Tuesday, it'll be 52. And Wednesday, we could be near 60.
Well, there's just no excuse.
That's right.
Yeah. No excuses for those kind of days. We can't blame it on being too cold when it gets up in the 50s.
Yeah, that's right.
Or even the 40s. It's, you know, that's what sweaters are for, and sweatshirts and so on.
But now, I remember you said something about after you take that Christmas tree out of the house, before you plant it, you need to put it, say,
well,
in the garage or something.
Reacclimate a little bit, kind of go through a desensitizing process, I suppose. You did get it is used to being in a very climate-controlled environment, so it's a good idea to transition. It's kind of like hardening off a plant, you know, that if you grew a vegetable plant, you started plants from seed in the house, and they're getting up a size, you're ready to put them them outside. You don't just move them from that protected climate-controlled environment, go stick them in the ground, because then it'll probably be too much of an environmental shock to them. They need to harden off, if you will. So allowing them to spend a couple of days or a few days, you know, how long does it need to be? Not an extremely long time, but, you know, two or three days in the garage where it's not as warm and so on, but it is cooler, but it is somewhat protected. We'll kind of help it transition, become a little more acclimated before you stick it in the ground.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. So just let it get used to the outdoors once again.
And the live trees are the real trees, you know, the cut trees. Obviously they're not live anymore, they're dead. They may still be green and pretty. You know, I just heard you advertise the on the Good Neighbor events about collecting they had the tree drop off.
Recycling.
Folks could recycle the trees. And if you have property where you can deal with it yourself versus taking it somewhere, you know, brush piles, honestly, now brush piles, if you would like to improve habitat for some wildlife, brush piles are an excellent way to do it.
Ah, hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, rabbits and so on, they appreciate a brush pile. Of course, if you don't want brush piles, then you know, take it to have it recycled. Also, something else, if you have a pond, you have property with a pond and you have stocked it for fishing, old Christmas trees can make good cover for fish.
Drop it in the pond?
Yeah, drop it in the pond. Maybe you tie a concrete block to it so it'll sink. But it creates an area there where small fish can hang out. You know, big fish then tend to come hunt smaller fish and so on. It provides some cover, some natural structure. It would be natural structure, but you're adding that structure to the pond area. So that's another possible use for those discarded Christmas trees.
Now, how long would that last once you put it in the water? I mean, is it going to decay pretty quickly?
It's going to last a long time, Bart. I can't really say how long it is, but you think about in the lakes and so on, when they were flooded, well, there's still treetops there that are intact today, and people are hanging and hanging hooks
like
and losing
Percy Priest and all those
hanging hooks and losing lines. I've been there a long time. And you think about, you know, shipwrecks. They find wooden, still intact sections of wooden ships and so on. The decay does take place, but it's not as rapid as it would be when it's exposed to the oxygen as well as the moisture.
Okay, so a lot of you remember those days when there was no Percy Priest, and also Old Hickory wasn't what it is now either. Sure. You drove around Old Hickory Boulevard through where the lake is now, and that wasn't that long ago.
No, but it's getting longer every day.
It is.
Further away every day.
You know, I guess those roads are still there, too. You think they are? Maybe some houses. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know what steps were taken prior to flooding the property, if they removed the structures or not. But if they didn't, then I suspect you'd still find remains there.
Yeah. Maybe some of you have done some diving in the area or remembering driving through those areas. Give us a shout. 893-1450. Now, this is January, and it won't be too long till spring. I mean, really, it won't be long until spring is here.
Not long at all.
And I guess at the springtime, that's when we start thinking about getting rid of weeds and what have you, or reseeding. You don't do both, do you?
No, you don't generally plant grass seed. I assume that's what we're talking about, grass seed, or control weeds. We don't do that at the same time. So, no, you're exactly right. You brought up a good point. In lawns, this late summer, fall season that we have just put behind us was a good time. It was a good season. It was very conducive for winter annual weed germination and growth. Good populations of chickweed, henbit, purple dead nettle. Those are the three ones we'd probably see in the greatest quantities, but also you see shepherd's purse. That's another one. And one called hairy bittercress. That's a very common winter annual broadleaf weed. Their populations are really good in places where the seed bank had a lot of those seed in there to germinate and come up. And if you've got populations of those in an existing turf now, prior to letting those things go ahead and complete their life cycle and make seed, on some of these milder days, especially when the temperature's in the 50s and above, you can certainly be effective in controlling those with the application of broad-spectrum, broad-leaf herbicide, a broadleaf weed killer. And it selects for the broadleaf weeds and does not select for the grass. So it's safe for grass plants, but it does have activity against broadleaf plants. But on milder days when your temperatures are in the 50s, and especially if it's sunny, you don't want the wind blowing because that can cause some problems of keeping the material where you want it, you know, cause it to move off target and so on. But, you know, the best advice is just follow the label directions and follow those suggestions and recommendations, and generally things work pretty good. But you can sure do that.
One thing we were doing in 2012, and I'm wondering how it stands in 2013, that's the emerald ash borer. How close is this beetle getting to
us?
Well,
confirmed in Smith County.
Smith County,
yeah.
Okay.
That's you know, pretty close.
Yeah, too close.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be here. It may be here now. That's one of those things you never know for sure just when a critter shows up. There are traps, monitoring traps, all across the county. Folks may have seen them, triangular-shaped structures, generally painted purple in color, hanging out of a tree. You know, it could be on the side of a road or down a lane somewhere.
Now, can you get rid of them, or is this just something that once they get here, they're here forever?
Well, do you get rid of them? I don't know. I don't know that you ever eradicate them from an area. You can certainly protect trees from those insects, just like you can many other insects. Of course, ash trees are their target. And in the places where they have been for a while and have good populations, they, you know, ash trees are just few and far between. They're very difficult to find there. A common insecticide that shows very good activity against emerald ash borers in terms of protecting trees is the ingredient imidacloprid. It's been around a number of years, and it's been available for versions for homeowners as well as professionals to use. It's easy to apply because you don't have to spray it on. You can just mix it in water, or it can come in a granular form where you apply it to the soil around the tree, or you mix it in water and apply it to the soil around the tree, and then allow it to be absorbed into the soil and then by the tree roots and carried up. And it provides preventative protection against the emerald ash borers as well as lots of other insects. And if a person wanted to be proactive and protect some ash trees in their landscape, then that's certainly a good way to do it. You do want to do it prior to a tree becoming infested. It's not that great at trying to eradicate already established infestations, but it does an excellent job of preventing those infestations. And the good thing about it is it's, you know, once a year is generally an adequate application schedule for that insecticide. It generally provides a year's worth of protection inside the tree.
Now, I guess once we, you know, get rid of the problems that with the trees, where you protect the trees, if the emerald ash doesn't get enough of those trees, do they die off?
Well, it seems that they are pretty much kind of species specific in terms of their feeding. Again, I don't claim to be an authority on emerald ash borers. We've not had experience with them here. But some of the reading I've done doesn't indicate that they then turn their attention to oak trees or hackberry trees or cedar trees or whatever the case may be. They're pretty pretty specific to the ash tree. And I don't know why that is. You know, why do bugs do what they do, or why do they eat what they eat? I mean, that's the way they were made, I reckon. So that's kind of a good thing, I guess, in terms of the ash borer. But you know, the traps that are out there, and again, they're scattered all around this county, all across Tennessee. I've had folks call and say, you know, I've seen this thing hanging out here. What is that? We didn't put them there. All right, first of all, the Tennessee Department of Agriculture put those there, and they monitor those on whatever the schedule is that they're on, but they come by and check those traps. That's how they learned, you know, that they were in Smith County. And so I say, well, when will they get here? Do I believe they will get here? Well, absolutely, I think they'll get here because, you know, they were first discovered in East Tennessee 2 years ago, I guess. Well, so they show up in Smith County. But they haven't necessarily been seen in a lot of counties between East Tennessee and Smith County. But odds are pretty good they didn't just run all that way.
You know, unless they went in some wood.
And that's the thing. And that's one way that they're carried. That increases the spread. People moving firewood.
Mm-hmm.
People moving firewood, you know. And gosh, they do it. You know, they go camping, they carry firewood. You know, they'll cut firewood in one county and drive over another county and sell firewood. That is probably the prime way that these critters get moved, that these tree insects get moved, especially the boring type insects that are carried in firewood. So, you know, I suspect that they will occur in Rutherford County. So don't be shocked when it happens.
Well, let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today? Hello.
Hi. I'm doing fine. Mitchell, I just wondered if there were any bio-friendly pests that we could get that would control ash borers.
I haven't heard of any that are being utilized. It'd be great if there were some, like, you know, the fire ants. There's the little fly, the florid fly that actually decapitates the fire ants as part of their reproductive process. But I haven't heard of any that have been looked at as showing good promise for the ash borer at this time.
Good thought, well, though.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a natural predator for them, but I'm not aware of any at this point.
I just thought they came from Europe, right?
It's an introduced from Europe, yes. Mm-hmm. Or Europe or Asia, one. It's a foreign insect. It's an imported insect. And it came in on lumber or wood products shipped in the United States.
Yeah. Leaves a lot of good timber.
Well, it certainly can. And, you know, folks think, well, shoot, you know how to protect the trees. It's very simple to do with a imidacloprid. But it's also very difficult to look at protecting an entire forest and going out and treat an entire forest like that. So once the thing's established here, we're going to lose some trees, some ash trees, no doubt about that.
You said that it took out the ash and does it take out oak and maple too?
From what I understand about it right now, no, it's pretty much limited to the ash trees. And, I can't explain why that is, but that's the information that I've seen on it, that it's kind of specific to ash trees. And now it would be, it would feed or prey, if whatever term we want to use, on all of the ash trees. You know, white ash, green ash, so on. It would feed on all of those. So any of the ash trees would be susceptible to it.
Okay. We thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Happy New Year to you.
Good morning. You're on WGNS. How are you today?
I'm fine. Hope y'all are doing good, too. I wanted to add something here. You're talking about the ash borer. Trees, when I walk up and down our driveway, we're on a edge of a forest out here at Rockvale, and we have some large oaks. I think one is a white oak, but I don't know what this one is in particular. I've noticed all through the summer, and I noticed this last year, I'll see a real nice, healthy-looking branch, new growth, and I'll go over and pick up that branch, and I don't know if I'm going to explain this good so you can get it in your head, but it looks like somebody's taken a nice little finishing kind of instrument and just gone around the branch where it was detached from, you know, the branch that's still on the tree.
Yes.
And it's a smooth little just area, rounded. Of course, I know an insect did it, but I have found a lot of branches like that, and I just wonder, I thought about bringing it into the office and letting you look at it. What is doing that, or do you even know?
Well, I think so. How what diameter are these little branches
they're
finding?
Little branches.
So fingers like smaller than a pencil diameter?
About the size of a pencil, a little smaller.
And smaller, okay. That'd be there's more than one thing that'll do that. Now, there's insects that are referred to as twig girdlers that do that. They've been around a long, long time. Somehow through their reproductive cycle, laying their eggs and so on, is why they do that. I mean, they're laying eggs in there and they're girdling that. And also, you'll occasionally see this kind of activity from squirrels, where they come in and they will I don't know if they're sharpening their teeth or what they're doing, but they will come in and just cut small limbs out of trees. I've seen them do it on cedar trees and lots of others. Even seen them do it to bark, just kind of like chip bark off trees.
But yeah.
Well, probably what you're talking about is a thing called a twig girdler, and there are various ones of them out there. They're not a real serious kind of pest because they don't really infest the tree. They'll just cause those limbs to drop, and it looks a lot worse than it is in most cases.
Yeah, it's a good healthy looking.
Yes.
I wanted to say too, when I was in North Carolina not too long ago, I made a comment about all the pines, you know, looking, they look dead.
Uh-huh.
And the person that lived there said, oh, that's the pine something, you know, that has come in and it's killed all the pines. And
yes, ma'am. Remember, a few years ago, we had a deal in East Tennessee primarily, but the southern pine beetle population got pretty high. And you see it, especially driving down the interstate headed into East Tennessee, you'd see a lot of dead pine trees. And
wow.
It was associated
yeah.
with that. So they're kind of cyclical, but those beetles have been, with us for a long time. And their populations ebb and flow, as do most insects. But this emerald ash borer, it's a new critter, so we've got to
yeah.
well,
we
get
an
used to
right
it.
We have an ash right in the backyard that I think it needs to come down because it looks like it could, you know, it's on the edge of the tree, the fence line,
uh-huh.
and it looks like it could fall on the house, so maybe it would be better just to take it down.
Well, I mean, if it's a good, you know, that's the thing. People ask, well, is this tree a hazard tree or not? And an honest answer to that is, well, if it's located in such a way that through natural causes or through weather-related causes, whatever the case, if it were to fall, if it's going to destroy real property, then by nature where it sits, it's a hazard.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but now if it's a good sound tree, you know, the likelihood of that happening is probably no greater today than it was yesterday.
Yeah.
But if it's something you want to protect, I mean, you can do it. You can certainly protect ash trees. Just
well, it's
use
a big tree now. What are we to be looking for? Is the bark going to start to deteriorate, or will the leaves fall off? Or
well, you mean when it starts to decline?
If we get the borers, uh-huh.
Now, you don't want to wait till you get a borer to do anything about it. You need to try to protect it ahead of time, because when you see decline and it's caused by the borer, it's too late to do anything.
Too late.
Yeah, but you'll see all those things. You'll see limbs dying. Just scattered throughout the tree. In a lot of cases, you'll see bark starting to turn loose from the tree and peel back in an unnatural way. You know, some trees do that. You know, water maples,
yeah.
Silver maples, while they shed bark and peel bark back, some hickory trees do that. But, unnatural release of the bark from the tree itself.
Okay.
But if you want to protect it ahead of time, just on a yearly basis, go out early in the spring of the year and apply a dose of imidacloprid insecticide around the tree. It's real simple, easy to do, and the one application generally protects it for the entire season.
Okay. Thank you, Mitchell.
Yes, ma'am. You're
mm-hmm.
very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Good luck to you. 893-1450 is our number. 893-1450. If you're on the line, hold on. You're coming up next.
Live with breaking news. This is Talk Radio WGNS.
Here's more on a story you heard earlier this morning on WGNS. There was a brief police standoff this morning here in Murfreesboro. The incident occurred on Gresham Lane. It was initially reported as being on Mullins Court, but that incident was later found to be non-substantial. In that case, the suspect did not refuse to turn himself in, according to Sergeant Kyle Evans with the Murfreesboro Police Department. In the incident on Gresham Lane this morning, the suspect, who was believed to be armed with a knife, talked to dispatch over the telephone and agreed to release his weapon. Deputies quickly moved in and placed the suspect in cuffs. We understand that it took multiple deputies to subdue the man, who was covered in blood. He evidently tried to remove a tattoo from his body with a kitchen knife. We'll have more on that story. Good morning to you from WGNS, keeping you informed 24 hours each and every day.
Sometimes you gotta wonder, is there anybody in town Truman Jones doesn't know? Truman Jones is on weekday mornings at 9 on WGNS.
Ford of Murfreesboro has just been named the #1 Shelby Cobra dealership in the United States. Test drive the Shelby Cobra that has the all-new supercharged 5.8-liter V8. Ford of Murfreesboro is also named the number 3 dealer in the U.S. for selling the Mustang Roush. Come test drive and take home a new 540-horsepower Stage 3 Mustang from Roush today. Ford of Murfreesboro, your Roush and Cobra headquarters. On Broad at Northfield Boulevard and online at fordofmurfreesboro.com.
Hello, this is Lisa Halliburton from Bell Jewelers. Looking for a new look? Update your gemstones by letting us remount your jewels into a new style. White gold, yellow gold, vintage, modern. Let Bell Jewelers help you design a special piece with your old gemstones, or let our award-winning jeweler, Bob Lanier, custom make a fabulous piece just for you.
Visit Bell Jewelers on Broad across from Toots.
Roberts Auto Repair, honest and fair, on Broad across from Ford of Murfreesboro.
Forget spending thousands of dollars at the dealership and come see me. We have complete maintenance schedules just like the dealer. At Roberts Auto Repair, we're always honest, always fair.
Good afternoon. Murfreesboro Police working one accident. This is South Church Street at I-24. Also, looks like the situation involving the standoff, the investigation from earlier this morning continuing. Gresham Lane traffic being affected by that, so anticipate that. We've got a bit of congestion also. Oldport Parkway at Chaffin Place. Traffic easing a bit on Oldport Parkway at Cason Lane and Broad at Memorial. Get a $39 introductory massage at Massage Envy today. Gift cards available for any occasion. Massage Envy, Cool Springs, Bellevue, Brentwood, and Green Hills. I'm Randy O'Brien with traffic on WGNS.
Thank you, Randy. What about that Murfreesboro weather? Brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
WeatherEye.
We'll see sunny skies developing in our forecast later on this afternoon with a high temperature in the lower 40s, and it's bit clear and starlit conditions tonight with a low of 24. I'm WGNS meteorologist Sandra Nystead. Right now, it's 27.
This is Frieda Morgan at First National Bank of Murfreesboro. If you're thinking about buying a home or refinancing a home, see Becky Walker or Jonathan Bolden at First National Mortgage Services, 2230 Mercury Boulevard, an equal housing lender.
Good Neighbor Talk covers issues you won't hear anywhere else. They're local issues. WGNS, AM, FM, online.
We're back again. 893-1450 is our number, 893-1450. Mitchell Motes with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. And let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Mote. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, sir. How are you?
Doing great, thank you.
I don't know if I need to talk to an entomologist or if I need to talk to Mr. Moat. He seems informed on a lot of things, so I'm going to go with him this morning.
That's a good...
I'm going to put a disclaimer out there. There's not an entomologist here, so you go ahead.
Well, I'm going to go ahead. I have noticed if I dig down, especially around older trees, I do that a lot of times, just maybe to add some fertilizer or something to it, you know, thinking that I'm doing the right thing.
Yes.
But there is a red and black, it resembles a hornet, but it does not have wings, and it looks like it is very dangerous. And if you step on it, you might as well grind the bottom of your shoes. I've even taken the time to cut one in half, and they still are active.
Yep.
Is that a hornet? Is it an ant? Is it a wasp? And if it is either thing, how can I control those things? And I've also seen them out in the middle of a lot where there is no tree.
Yeah.
I've seen them beside the house. And I would love to know how I can get rid of them, or is there any kind of prevention?
Okay.
And
don't hang up. Hang on.
Go ahead and hang up.
No, don't hang up. Don't hang up. Don't hang up. Stay on the line. I'll ask you something else. When you see them, do you see very many of them at a time?
Most of the time, I have dug down a foot deep into the ground.
Yes.
And I might dig down 6 inches. I've gone from soft ground down into.
Right, but as far as like the number of critters that you see, you don't see a lot of them all in one spot, do you?
No, I do not.
Okay. Well, I tell you what that is. You're right. It resembles a wasp or a hornet, and it also resembles an ant. And it's commonly referred to as a velvet ant or some people will use the term a cow killer ant, but in actuality it is a wasp. It's called a solitary wasp. And it's called a solitary wasp because it's not, for instance, it's not like a paper wasp, like red wasp, or it's not like yellow jackets, where they build communal nests and have a large population of them together. They're called solitary because you generally just see one at a time. And I forget which either the male or the female, one or the other, does not have wings. One of them does have wings, and the one that without wings tends to be a little bit larger than the one with the wings, if I recall. But it is a wasp, not an ant, although it certainly resembles an ant, and it crawls on the ground like an ant, especially those wingless ones. Now, I myself have never seen one flying. I've not run across one of the winged versions of this critter. It has the capability of stinging, and as you would think, based on the size of it, it can probably hurt. I don't have personal experience being stung by one, and so far I haven't felt bad about missing that experience. But from all accounts, they do have a very a painful sting. They would most likely sting someone if they stepped on with a bare foot. Mm-hmm. It's not like where you get into fire ants, they're going to come and swarm up around you. Well, number one, you're not going to see that many together in the first place. As far as controlling them, I mean, you could put out insecticidal baits that are effective against a broad spectrum of insects. As they are solitary ants, they tend to be hunting ants. They move out over a significantly large area of ground as they go about their feeding process. So just broadcasting that bait out there would be probably the most effective way to try to control them.
Could you tell me why? What would be a brand of insecticide, and are they dangerous to, or are they poisonous to the human body?
They're not poison to the human body unless a person has a particular. They're no worse than any other wasp or hornet unless someone has a particular sensitivity to them. Now, if you know, there are folks that can be stung by a red wasp and it's no big deal, and the next person gets stung by it, they have allergic reaction to it, and it becomes life or death matter. That's the only way that they would be a significant danger to people. And again, you know, you'd just about have to force one to sting you. You'd have to step on it or sit on it or something like that in order to make that happen, because they don't really seek people out in those regards. They are a solitary kind of a ant. As far as brands of insecticide products, you could use any of those brands, you know, Ortho, Bayer, etc. They all make a variety of insecticides. You'd be looking for ingredients, a couple of different kinds of ingredients. One, those that end in R-I-N, for instance, bifenthrin, permethrin, cyfluthrin. Those are synthetic pyrethroid insecticides. They work against a broad variety of insects, okay? Another kind is, and that's not really a bait, that's just a that's more of a contact kind of insecticide. From a bait standpoint, you'd be looking at something, say, like Emdro is a brand name, for example. Chipco they have a number of baited products. Over and Out is another bait that would work against a variety of soil insects. So those are some options. And again, there's lots of others.
Will that go deep enough into the ground to get a nest, or do they have nests underground?
Well, they don't have large nests. Again, they're kind of solitary, so it would be, you know, the female, and I don't know how many eggs the female lays. Will they go deep enough if they're applied and carried? If there's enough water to move them in the ground, then yeah, they can move deep enough. They can. But I think that broadcasting them over the ground like that, where the ants come into contact with them, especially the bait products, you don't have to worry about them going into the ground, because they're out there for the critter to pick it up.
Well, I don't mean to sound like I'm being cruel to a hornet or a wasp or anything, but next time I see one, I'm going to cut it in half, and I guarantee you it's still going to be intact. It'll be active.
Well, and you know, if you step on it and it stings you, it's probably not trying to be cruel to you either. It's just doing what it's supposed to do.
Oh, like it's called self-protection.
I guess so. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Thank you so much, Mr.
All right. You have a great day.
Thanks for calling.
Uh-huh. You're welcome.
893-1450. And speaking of self-protection, here's an extension of that thought. The Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency says the black bear population is expanding dramatically. And they underline that word dramatically. Says Tennessee's population of black bears has increased, and spottings have been documented in most areas of East Tennessee, all the way including around the Cumberland Plateau. Now, the Cumberland Plateau, that would be Crossville and Cookville and that whole area there.
Yeah, I mean, Mont Eagle and so on.
Yeah, that whole thing up there. And the interesting thing is this report from the TWRA says that it is not impossible that bears could someday range in Middle Tennessee and West Tennessee. So we're talking about, these are 600-pound fluffies, but they're not always your friend.
Well, again, it's just, I figure I've lived 53 years without having bears here. It suits me fine to not have bears, but if they're coming, I don't know a thing we're going to do about it.
No, there's not a thing you can do about it.
No.
But with their population growing, and, you know, I wonder, we're trying to establish things that nature has taken out. We'd put elk up there, didn't we?
Well, people, we look at maintaining
turkeys,
wild areas, green spaces and so on. And in some cases, we create problems for ourselves by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
When you, it's just, I don't know any way to avoid it. I mean, as long as our population grows, people have to live somewhere. And so we get closer to natural habitat areas. People experience deer problems today that didn't experience deer problems 30 years ago. And what are deer problems? Well, they eat your pansies out of the flower bed. That's a deer problem. That's one that's near and dear to my heart because I replaced them twice now, because they'll eat them right out of the front flower bed there at my house. And you run into them. There was a right over here on St. Andrews Drive. I mean, just on the sidewalk in front, across the street, but in front of the. The school out there, Scales
Elementary School. Scales, uh-huh.
I mean, there was a deer was hit by a car laying on the sidewalk, things like that. They coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
Coyotes are in Murfreesboro.
Oh, have been for decades.
And raccoons and so on, they're in Murfreesboro. Wild turkeys are in hawks and so on.
Right out on the traffic lights, just sitting there watching.
Oh, you see them out there, and what, well, you think about hawks, you think about coyotes. They tend to feed on small animals. Now, mm-hmm. Coyotes, they have a very diverse palate. They'll eat tomatoes, they'll eat watermelons, they'll eat cucumbers, they'll eat puppies, they'll eat kittens. Sometimes when Fluffy is missing, mm-hmm. Fluffy hadn't run off,
could
Fluffy
be.
Was carried off, it could be.
Yeah.
Those are just problems we need to be aware of that can happen by coming into contact or close proximity with these animals. And, populations... Have been on the rise. They're saying that the TWRA is telling us that the bear population is increasing. Well, if it's going to continue to increase, they have got to have enough range to support their population, because that is a limiting factor for any wild animal population, is there not enough food, shelter, etc. that they need. If there's not in a given area, their population is either going to decline or the population is going to expand to take in more territory. And so we see that here, the local habitat, if you will, gets smaller. So when we create green spaces and wild areas within, within our developed areas, we're going to see stuff like that. We're going to come into contact, or the chances of us coming into contact with critters are going to be better.
So we may one day just drive up on the square and find a bear walking around the courthouse.
I think that'd be rare, but, who knows?
They were walking down the streets of Knoxville, I think, about a year or so ago.
Things like that do happen.
893-1450 is our number, 893-1450. Mitchell Motes with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. We're talking lawns and gardens and critters and all sorts of things. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Skipping through the scenery, admiring the greenery. I don't care what the weather be, there's no place I would rather be.
We're talking about your favorite teams every afternoon. This is George Plaster. Join me for Sports Night, weekdays 3 to 6, here on WGNS.
Does your home have foundation problems? Bricks cracking, doors sticking, basement walls bowing, floors uneven, or water problems? Where do you turn? What name do you know and trust? Call United Structural Systems at 227-2275. For over 17 years, United Structural Systems has stabilized, restored, and guaranteed over 5,800 homes and businesses in Middle Tennessee. We know that you, like our customers, want a restored home, a lifetime guarantee, and the peace of mind that United Structural Systems, a locally owned company, will be here for you. Call United Structural Systems today at 227-2275 or visit them on the web at usstn.com. United Structural Systems, known best for being better.
We'll guarantee our best. Call USS.
We'll see sunny skies developing in our forecast later on this afternoon with a high temperature in the lower 40s, and expect clear and starlit conditions tonight with a low of 24. I'm WGNS meteorologist Sandra Nyste. Right now, it's 27.
For decades, we've been telling you that Bell Furniture has first-quality, name-brand furniture half-price every day. Now this locally owned family business has pictures of some of their furniture on the internet at www.bellfurnitureonline.com. Save with Perry Bell at Bell Furniture, 1517 the New Nashville Highway,
halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna.
And on the internet at www.bellfurnitureonline.com. Since 1940, your first choice for air conditioning and heating repairs has been Roscoe Brown. Now when you have plumbing problems, it's also Roscoe Brown. You can depend on Roscoe Brown for any type of plumbing service and innovative plumbing solutions. Roscoe Brown is fully licensed, bonded, and insured, and fully qualified to assist with heating, air conditioning, and now plumbing. Roscoe Brown. Phone 888-MY-ROSCOE.
Overnight, Good Neighbor Talk turns to UFOs, aliens, the unknown. It's Coast to Coast AM overnight every night on WGNS, Murfreesboro.
We're back again. Do you have any sightings to report? 893-1450. Bears, turkeys, deer, UFOs.
That show is on later,
later tonight
or real early tomorrow, I think, the UFO show. I think it is.
Oh, boy.
But, yo, look out there, Bart. The sun is trying to shine.
It's looking good out there.
This might be the first sunny day of the year, right here.
I'm ready for it.
I am, too.
You know, this is the time of the year where you do get cabin fever. There's nothing worse than a winter gray day.
Sunshine just makes
it. Even if it's 27 degrees outside.
27 degrees and sunny is just not as unpleasant as 27 degrees and cloudy and dreary and overcast, and especially if it's been that way for 3 or 4 days in a row. But doggone it, Bart, what is this, the third day of January?
Yeah, it is.
Third day of January. You know, I mean, we are a month away from putting seed in the ground.
We are?
For early gardening.
Okay.
I mean, you think about your English peas, you know, sugar peas, snap peas. February is when you plant those. Onions, radishes, lettuce, and mustard, and kale, and so on. Those are February planted. That's when you can start to plant those in February. So,
Should we be getting the ground ready now?
You know what? Should you do it? Yeah. Can you do it? Well, maybe not. I mean, mm-hmm. It depends on what the conditions are like outside. But if you are a bed gardener you know, raised beds, that gives you an advantage because that ground is, because it's a taller column of soil that's going to drain faster. So it'll drain faster, and a drier soil warms up faster. So it's, you know, it reaches growing conditions earlier than flat gardens, if you will, in-ground gardens. You don't have any beds, well, you can certainly build some now. You know, these good days where you're in the 40s and 50s and you've got clement weather outside versus rain and slush and so on, you can certainly put together some beds and be getting ready for that.
Now, if you're going to sort of venture into that and build yourself a bed right now, what do you put in it? I mean, do you just regular dirt or mulch or what do you put in it?
Well, it's you kind of create a soil. Mm-hmm. Now, you can use native soil. Okay, you can certainly do that. And native soil is going to make up the base anyway because, you know, how deep are you going to make this thing? Well, depends on what you build it out of. You can build out of 2-inch, 2.5-inch tall landscape timbers, mm-hmm. And then build it 5 or 6 or 8 tall. Well, gosh, you know, the taller you get it, then the more soil it'll hold, the deeper your soil column will be. Some things require deep soil. If you want to grow carrots, you need ground deep enough to grow carrots in. So mm-hmm. you'd want to, you know, at least 1 foot of soil in there to grow those carrots in. Radishes don't take a lot of soil, you know, or lettuce doesn't take a large depth of soil. But you can use native soil, but though most of our native soils are going to be heavy, if you will, because of the clay content they have in them. So you can go a couple of routes. You can buy soil that's already been prepared. You know, you buy garden soil in bags. Okay, that's certainly an option to use to put into a bed. Another option would be to buy maybe some screened topsoil. Okay, that someone has you know, they've dug and they run through a screen and removed debris, etc., and it's very uniform in texture and particle size, and maybe they've already mixed a little compost in with that. If that's not the case, you might think about mixing your own. You know, get some screened topsoil and some bulk compost and maybe a little sand, a little builder sand or something like that, and mix those ingredients together and create a good draining, easy to penetrate, very tillable soil to put in those raised beds versus just the native ground. So you don't have excess, or you can't locate any screened topsoil, but you've got a dirt pile there. You know, it's from wherever. All right, you can utilize that. Take that soil, but again, add some compost, mix them together. There's no magic formula. If you go half and half soil to compost, that's a good thing. If you want to add some sand to it, you maybe go half native soil, and then maybe a fourth compost and a fourth sand, something. But you know, just something in there to help improve that texture and improve drainage and so on. Just the free ability of the soil to improve the tilt of that soil.
Do you need to put a plastic pad down before you put the dirt in?
I wouldn't put a plastic pad down at all, because that's, you're creating a big bowl if you do that.
Oh,
you want
okay.
some, if you're going to use anything like that, make it a permeable mm-hmm. membrane, like a, you know, a landscape or a geotextile fabric that will allow water and air to move through it, but may inhibit weed growth up to a point. I mean, it's a good idea though to start on a clean, you know, start on a clean site. Go in and just, you know, take your shovel and your hoe and just remove that existing vegetation, start well far enough in advance. Cover it with some plastic and let, you know, nature kill it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Or cover it with several layers of newspaper, and that's going to smother the existing plants there, and it's going to decompose and break down anyway, and it's not going to keep air and water from moving through it. So that's an option as well.
So start that raised garden.
Yeah,
now.
I mean, if you want to get those February, take advantage of the February planting dates, and you don't have an area, then yeah, you need to build one. You need to create one, whether it's going to be in the ground or, and you can build a raised bed. It doesn't have to take any fancy structure to do it. Generally, if you will put some time and effort into it and build a nice retaining structure, it'll hold it together. It'll be there a long time. But I mean, you can build a raised bed, just, you know, it's called a pile, a raised bed without something surrounding it. It's just a pile. You might want a long flat pile versus a tall peaked pile, you know, to plant something on.
So that gives you a little something to work on.
And, you bet. Because,
start,
I mean,
planting in February.
February, those, again, onions and sugar peas, snap peas, lettuce and kale, things like that.
Ooh, getting hungry already. Mitchell Moat visiting with us this morning from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. Mitchell, thank you for joining us.
Oh, Bart's my pleasure.
Have a super rest of the day. Stay with us. Much more to come right here on your Good Neighbor Station.
Enemy, God, I have a heart attack. You better get some insurance on me, baby.